Welcome back to another episode of the Jacob Johnston Show. Yes, I am back on the video version of the show. Now, I have come back from break earlier on the audio version, so if you're subscribed to the audio version podcast, you've been able to enjoy my content ever since I've come back from break. However, there were some technical difficulties, and I had to eventually just uninstall and reinstall everything in order to get the video back up. But enough about that. You haven't come here to hear me talk about technical difficulties. You want to hear what's going on. All right, so there are continuing fallouts from the election that happened last Tuesday. And one of the fallouts is due to the fact that the Democrats are just completely stupid, especially the base. They have no concept of reality. And while there are many examples of this, their inability to understand economic realities, business realities, has come back to bite them in the butt yet again. So, in St. Paul, they had a ballot initiative. And that ballot initiative was for rent control. Yes, you know, the best way to lift people out of poverty is to control rent. Yes, you know, because those evil, greedy corporatists, they keep raising the rent and sucking those at the bottom of the income scale dry of any money. And if only you could control rent, well, then they would be able to save more money through their annual raises and lift themselves up out of poverty. However, economic reality bit them in the butt yet again. So, as being reported by Hot Air, predictable, developers pause St. Paul project after rent control passage. And if you look up the article, it will read, St. Paul voters cheered the passage of a new law in last week's election that imposed rent control with rent increases capped at 3% each year. Why 3%? Well, that is typically the rate of inflation, historically the rate of inflation. The new law includes new development as well as existing rentals, an incentive that has had an entirely predictable impact, and in record time, no less. Less than 24 hours after St. Paul voters approved one of the country's most stringent rent control policies, the phone started to ring. Developers were calling to tell the city's director of planning and economic development that they were placing projects on hold, putting hundreds of new housing units at risk. Yes, yes. So here's the thing. Developers aren't going to be going off and developing new housing if they're going to lose money on it. And this is what the left doesn't quite grasp or have any ability to understand in any way, shape, or form. See, when you take a look at it, especially right now, inflation is getting out of control, right? And when you go on and you develop these new projects, a lot of these companies, they will have to take out debt. You know, very few can do apartment complexes or such just out of their own pocket. So when they go off and they got to think about rent, they got to take a look at what it will cost to pay for whatever debt they took out, plus being able to have enough money on top of that for maintenance on the property. And as you know, with inflation getting out of control, the cost of doing such maintenance is going up. And they got to be able to price that. So if you have a situation where costs are going up 5%, but you're only able to increase rent at 3%, you're losing 2% as a developer. And so they're saying, fine, you want to do this? Guess what? No more housing units. We're canceling all projects. And by the way, we're now going to go somewhere else. We're going to look at new areas for opportunities for development. So what does this mean for those in St. Paul? Well, they're going to end up in a housing crisis. They're going to end up looking a lot more like California with a lot of homeless encampments. Why? Because just like you see in California, just like you see in the state of Washington, the fact that they have manipulated the zoning laws, the local politicians, and have made the cost of construction so high, there's not enough companies coming in, developers coming in, to build new houses. And therefore, you see population increasing in certain areas with no real increase in housing. And you have a housing shortage. And yet the left thinks that they scored a major victory here, when really all they did is screwed themselves. And when you take a look at this, this is aimed at rent increases. So if a developer were to come into an area and decide, okay, what would it take for us to be able to be profitable, not lose money on this? So they develop, maybe they build an apartment complex. Well, they're looking at this going, well, we can only do 3% a year right now. Oh, I know. How about we just start off with a higher rent? And so now they're going to take a look at, okay, we can only do 3% increases. Here's what the cost of maintenance is going to be over this period of time. Maybe we'll be able to sell this to somebody else before the end of this particular time. So if we start off at, say, reasonable rent, it would have been at 600. So let's say we double that at 1200. And over the next decade, with the rising cost of inflation for the cost of maintenance and only being able to do a 3% increase, we'll be able to go 10 years before we are no longer profitable. So maybe after 5 years, we try to sell the property to somebody else. So the options are either no more housing to be built, which is going to be a problem if the population continues to grow, or for what is built, the rent will start off at a much higher level, which will make it a lot less affordable for the citizens and residents of St. Paul. And of course, the left will come out and say, well, they're pricing minorities out of that community. It's gentrification. They'll never accept responsibility for their own dumb butt decisions that have come back to screw them. Okay, now there are other issues that we need to go ahead and take a look at. So the Biden administration, they are incapable in any way, shape, or form of taking responsibility for any of their actions or the complete dumpster fire that their policies descend into. And one of the dumpster fires that are coming on the way, it regards heating costs for this winter, energy costs, the cost of your electric, your gas, for your heat, is going to continue to go up because of the policies of the Biden administration. And yet the Biden administration is coming out there going, don't blame us and our policies. Even though our policies are causing the problem, they're trying to scapegoat and say, oh, it's OPEC, right? But that's not true. We were energy independent before the Biden administration took hold, right? Yes. That was true. We were energy independent, which means OPEC didn't matter. We were the number one producers of oil and gas in the world under Trump. Therefore, OPEC was meaningless. And then Biden comes in, shuts it all down, shuts down the Keystone Pipeline, eliminating thousands of jobs. And now, after cutting off our energy production, just choking it to death, he's now going off and trying to beg OPEC to increase their production and then blame them for the policies or the effects of the policies of the Biden administration, which I get this. The Biden administration reversed course, canceled Keystone Pipeline and basically strangled our energy production to death, all in the name of climate change and the need to pursue renewable energy. And then when the predictable happens, we have an energy crisis. He goes to OPEC to increase fossil fuel production, but he wants to increase fossil fuel production overseas, enriching those overseas so that he can still claim that he cut fossil fuel production here in the United States to save the climate. I mean, if he was really concerned about the energy needs, the heating costs on the American people, he would reverse his previous policies and go back to the policies of the Trump administration for oil and gas production and reinstate the Keystone Pipeline. Of course, now if he goes off to reinstate the Keystone Pipeline, the investors are going to say, screw you. We're not going to invest more money not knowing when you're going to just suddenly decide to cut it off. And so we see this developing. And it's even being reported, well, by at least every conservative news outlet. Of course, the left-wing news will always go off and try to spin the situation. So, being reported from just the news, the cost of heating homes will increase this year, Energy Secretary warns. Geez, why is the energy cost and heating costs going up? Well, we've already covered that. Or how about this headline from NTD News? U.S. gasoline price vault to new seven-year high. So it's not just the heating costs, it's our transportation costs that are going on to set new highs. And yet, while we are taking a look at this, right? Sorry, my throat is a little dry, so it kind of cuts in and out a little bit. So just bear with me. So we're looking at higher energy costs for heating our homes, higher prices at the pump as the result of Biden's initiatives or his policies that have cut oil and energy production in the United States. But if the higher prices were not enough, guess what? Biden reportedly considering shutting down another oil pipeline as energy prices predicted to soar over the winter months. So apparently, the Biden administration doesn't think we have suffered enough as a country. He doesn't think the endless dumpster fires that he has already created is enough to inflict the pain and suffering needed to motivate us to vote for Democrats. Wait a minute. Does pain and suffering motivate people to vote for you? Well, apparently, the Democrats think so. I mean, think about this. If you can inflict enough pain and suffering, you can create people who are desperate, broken desperate, and they don't have time to pay attention to what's actually going on. They'll just go straight to the media outlets who will give them, you know, a spin, gaslight them, you know, just tell them little bit snippets here and there of information, right? And manipulate them because they don't have time to pay attention. They have to go to work to try and afford the cost of living, which continues to become unaffordable as a result of the Biden administration. But Biden's going to be able to go out there and say, hey, all this pain and suffering, that is because of the oil executives, the oil industry, the greedy OPEC. That is the problem. And that is why we need to switch to green renewable energy. And if you just elect us enough, we can make that switch fast. And then all the pain and suffering will go away. They inflict the pain. They lie about the cause of the pain. And then they tell you they have the solution to it. It's a typical left-wing tactic that unfortunately is effective for about 35 to 45% of the population. And it's sickening how they get away with it. The real truth here is that it's Biden's policies that are causing all of the pain and suffering that you are feeling with higher cost of living, shortages at the stores. I'm seeing more and more bare shelves, even in my area. You know, of course, the toilet paper aisle, that is starting to get cleared out again. So we're seeing a whole bunch of problems as a result of Biden's policy. And he's inflicting all of this while trying to get us to agree to switch over to an even higher costing, less efficient energy source. You know, they're green energy, solar energy. Solar, which, despite how long it's been around, still is not efficient enough or advanced enough to ever be able to provide for energy needs of even a single household. It may be able to cut down your energy consumption just a little bit. You know, and maybe if you're over in California, hey, maybe over there, it does provide a significant reduction. But over here in, let's say, the Midwest or, you know, in other parts of the country that isn't always sunny all year round, it doesn't quite cut it. It's pretty much sucks. And when you take a look at wind energy, well, that is very inconsistent. Which, by the way, these aren't actual clean energy sources. Even Michael Moore has had to admit that when you take a look at all the so-called clean energy, they tend to be dirtier and more polluting in their development and manufacturing than natural gas and oil. It's amazing. So he wants us to go to higher costs and lower energy production as somehow a solution for his policies of cutting energy production and higher costs. It seems like no matter which way we want to go here, he's intent on screwing us. He's intent on trying to make things as hard and as painful as possible. Now, Jim Jordan has come out and he has decided to really rip into the Biden administration. Of course, keeping it very professional and much nicer than what I would do in his position. But he has come out and he lists the failures after failures. And I must say, the Republicans, the younger Republicans in the House and the Senate, they are getting it. They are understanding the messaging. I saw where they were trolling Biden with a Let's Go Brandon rally in Brandon, Vermont. I mean, they're starting to get it. They're starting to understand the culture. You know, the culture wars or culture issues or, you know, however it is you want to talk about it. But they are finally getting involved in it instead of going out there like a bunch of nerds going through all the data, the stats, and all of that just for the Democrats to come out and just say, racism, therefore ignore all the facts and the figures. They finally get it and they're finally learning to communicate to regular people. So Jim Jordan goes out there and he lists just how horrible the Biden administration is.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I wish they had not have voted that way because, as you point out, six of the hard left voted against it, and we could have stopped the legislation. And as we've known now for months, they're actually linked. So the big spending or the bigger spending, the crazy spending is coming here soon. We'll just hope that Senator Manchin, Senator Sinema hold firm and don't pass it, because it's only going to create more harm for the country, more, I think, supply chain delays, more inflation. I mean, Maria, think about the Democrats' economic plan. It's basically locked down your economy, spend like crazy, pay people not to work, and then for everyone who has been working, they're getting ready to raise your taxes and pay $450,000 to people who illegally crossed our border and entered our country. The thing about Democrats is they just keep going. No matter what the voters say, they just keep doing their crazy radical agenda, and it's why Joe Biden's at 38% approval rating, because everything they've touched has been a mess. We went from a secure border to chaos. Yeah. We went from energy independence to the president begging OPEC to increase production. We went from safe streets to crime going up in every major urban area. We went from stable pricing to record inflation and supply chain delays. So, I mean, it's all a mess, but they don't care. That's what, because they're the hard left and they just keep going in the direction they are. The voters spoke up loud and clear, and God bless them on Tuesday. Turns out the American people don't really like defunding the police and don't like government saying that they're smarter than parents. So Tuesday night was a big win for America, but the Democrats in Congress, they're just going to continue their crazy left agenda.
Now, I think that sums up pretty well about just how bad the Biden administration is. I mean, think about that, how we went from secure borders to complete chaos, energy independence and a leader in energy production to now having to beg OPEC and the whole host of everything else, how we went from being respected in the world and feared in the world by our enemies to being the laughing stock of the world, where now it's an embarrassment to be an American citizen. I mean, and it hasn't even been a year. Hasn't even been a year. Now, of course, leftists, never having any response, just try to dismiss everything. Whenever the leftist is put up against the wall, they usually go to their istaphobes. They have no response, so they just scream racist, sexist, homophobe, transphobe, You know, they just keep making up new victim groups and new words to just go on their name calling because they have no response. Well, now other leftists are trying to seem a little more reasonable. So they're taking a look at the election results and go, hey, you know what? Calling parents, you know, a bunch of racists because they care about the education of their kids probably isn't a good idea. Not all leftists have figured this out. Some of them are still trying to say that it was all based off of racism and white supremacy. Oh, yes, the left is the one trying to segregate students by race in school, teach them to hate each other, tell one group of people that they will never achieve anything because of the color of their skin, and the other people that you are horrible, evil, garbage people because of the color of your skin. And they say that is anti-racism. Yes, they denied critical race theory because they say, well, we don't teach a class called critical race theory. No, you just take all the theories, assumptions, and all of the principles of critical race theory, and you embed it into every class. Now, one school administrator has come out and admitted that. But some who have figured out that just calling everybody and anybody who disagrees with you on anything horrible garbage, racist, sexist, istophobic, phobophobes is probably not a good idea. So those who are trying to seem like they are more reasonable have come up with a new way to just dismiss any criticism of Democrats or any criticism of the Biden administration. And it's the laziest one yet. And here it is.
Well, where is Joe Biden? Increasingly, I am having difficulty coming to terms with just how bad of a president that Biden actually is. This isn't some boomer monologue about empty shelves, Joe, or some bad faith critique.
Bad faith critique. That is the new line. Bad faith critique. Now, yes, he did say just how bad Joe Biden is as a politician. They weren't going off and saying that his policies are bad. Or that his administration has been, you know, a dumpster fire. No. The problem that they see with Joe Biden is that he's just not talking to the American people about the problems. You know, people are seeing prices go up, and Biden is just not coming out on camera and being empathetic enough with his words. No. The problem is, He is a bad president, but his policies are complete garbage. That's not bad faith critiques, right? All the empathy in the world does not matter. His policies suck. They intentionally inflict pain and suffering. So now the left that is trying to, you know, distance themselves from just calling everybody blatantly racist for any disagreement is now just trying to say, no. They're engaged in bad faith critique, criticizing Joe Biden for things that are not Joe Biden's fault or within Joe Biden's control. No. And if there is a problem with Joe Biden, is that he's not coming out and being empathetic, showing his empathy. You know, he's coming off as too cold and uncaring about the plight of the American people. He's just not communicating good enough. I don't know. You know, this is the left. You know, they cannot live in reality. They cannot actually take a look at what's going on and actually say, hey, you know what? The stuff that may have sounded good in theory absolutely sucks in practice. Knock it off. But, you know, this is the media. They are completely dishonest. We see them going off and we see them promoting conspiracy theories. We see them gaslighting the country. We see them inciting riots by trying to push false racial narratives, especially those involving police shootings. We see them going off and taking a look at every incident that involves people of different races and go half-cocked with absolutely no information, no facts, and going out there and telling the story that ends up being debunked repeatedly. And so you got to wonder, why do people still listen to it? And that is very well highlighted in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse. You know, they went off with their whole false narrative. I believe Rittenhouse is going to be much like Sandman, where after all of this is over, now Sandman wasn't actually involved in a shooting or anything, but I make the comparison in the fact that Rittenhouse, once the trial's over and it's not guilty, which is the only verdict that is within reason based off of everything that we have seen in the trial itself, is going to have a massive lawsuit against the media. Because if it wasn't for the media, if this was based strictly on the evidence, this never would have gone to trial. The prosecution would have dropped their case long ago. But the media has stirred everybody up into a frenzy with their false narratives, that the prosecution felt like, even though they had absolutely no case whatsoever, they had to try and prosecute this. Otherwise, the left will riot. And now that the trial is going on, you see that there are certain left-wing groups that are trying to get a hold of the jury information to be able to dox the jury. So just like with Derek Chauvin, the jury will not base their verdict on any of the evidence, but based out of fear of what the mob will do to the jury members should they render a verdict that doesn't appease the mob. And so, as evidence has come out in the trial, of course, a lot of this evidence was available for, you know, the vast majority of the past year. The media no longer able to blatantly lie to people who have been watching the trial, or most of them are trying to reverse course, apologize, say they made mistakes, they didn't see, you know, this video, that video, or basically they didn't bother looking at any of the available evidence. You know, they're claiming ignorance and, you know, wanting to go off and say they got this wrong or that wrong. But some outlets are doubling down and making analysis that just does not match what is going on in the courtroom in any way, shape, or form. And we see that. We see that with, I believe it's CBSN. Let me check here. Yes, CBSN. Their analysis of what happened during testimony does not meet what actually happened in the testimony. They're still blatantly lying and gaslighting their audience, hoping the audience doesn't have time to watch any of the live streams of the trial. And here's what that looks like.
And let's pivot now to Kyle Rittenhouse's trial, Jessica. Today, a man who was allegedly shot and wounded by Rittenhouse took the stand. What did we learn from him, and how do you think his testimony has been received so far?
This was hard testimony. He was very emotional. He said that I went there to support my First Amendment rights. He said, I'm a medic. I was there helping people on either side. He was really there to help the prosecution to say that Rittenhouse created the situation, and he can't then claim because he escalated the situation, again, similar to what I just said, that he could use self-defense. And I think the prosecution is really going to say Rittenhouse was young, was inexperienced, and he couldn't adequately assess that he should be using self-defense, that he wasn't reasonable. He was, in fact, seeing events not as a reasonable person would because of his youth, because of his inexperience. And I think the prosecution's witness today, the survivor, really emotional testimony. He was saying he lost 90% of his bicep. He lives this and breathes this every day. It's got to be hugely impactful for the jury.
Oh, really? That is your analysis here. That is your analysis of the testimony that was given by the guy who lost 90% of his bicep, that Kyle Rittenhouse was just too young to understand what a reasonable person would know is or is not a reasonable use of force, and that it was Kyle Rittenhouse who escalated the events of that night and therefore cannot claim self-defense. That is your analysis. I mean, CBSN is really relying on the assumption here that no one in their audience is watching any of the live streams of this trial. No one's actually listening to the testimonies. No one's actually viewing the evidence that is presented during this trial. And therefore, they think that if no one's watching it, they can get away with whatever lie they want to gaslight. They do this all the time. They just hope you're too lazy to do any fact-checking. And these are the authoritative sources. So why don't we go ahead and take a look at that very impactful testimony that they were just talking about. And let's see if it matches up to CBSN's narrative.
That's a photo of you, yes?
Yes.
Okay. That's Mr. Rittenhouse?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you'd agree your firearm is pointed at Mr. Rittenhouse, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And once your firearm is pointed at Mr. Rittenhouse, that's when he fires his gun. Yes?
No.
Sir, look, I don't want to... Does this look like right now your arm is being shot?
That looks like my bicep being vaporized, yes.
Okay. And it's being vaporized as you're pointing your gun directly at him. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, so when you were standing 3 to 5 feet from him with your arms up in the air, he never fired, right?
Correct.
It wasn't until you pointed your gun at him, advanced on him, with your gun, now your hands down, pointed at him, that he fired, right?
Correct.
The impactful testimony. When you had your hands down and weren't threatening him, he didn't shoot at you, did he? No. But when you pulled out your loaded weapon, standing over him, with your gun pointed at his head, that's when he fired. Yes. And the media, well, he's too young to understand when the proper use of force for self-defense would and would not apply. I would think if someone's standing over you while you're on the ground with a gun pointed to your head, a reasonable person would assume that that would be a time for a proper use of force. You know, to be able to go through and say, hey, it's time to defend myself. Now, there's a lot of other video and evidence that has come out besides that picture. In fact, one of the so-called victims was live streaming on Facebook what was happening. And so what has gone on is the left, they were rioting and setting things on fire. I'm not sure where Kyle Rittenhouse had any ability to escalate events beyond full-on riots and setting buildings and dumpsters on fire. There's also video of Kyle Rittenhouse with his first aid kit, rendering aid to rioters who got injured, as well as people who were injured by the rioters. There is also video of Kyle Rittenhouse putting out a literal dumpster fire. The left and the rioters set a dumpster on fire. Kyle Rittenhouse comes up with a fire extinguisher, puts it out. One might say that was trying to de-escalate the situation. Then other witnesses that have been called by the prosecution have stated that the people who Kyle Rittenhouse had to defend himself against made comments earlier in the night that if they ever found Rittenhouse by himself, that they were going to kill him, and made statements such as F you while lunging for his gun. We have video from an aerial drone, whether that was the FBI surveillance drone or a private individual flying their own drone in order to catch video, as well as a whole bunch of cell phone videos, which, by the way, the investigating officer and the DA tried to hide, cover up, and prevent the defense from even knowing about. And then, of course, the FBI ends up somehow losing and destroying the high-definition video from the aerial camera. Of course, now, you know, it was found. And so all of the evidence keeps pointing to the inescapable fact that Rittenhouse wasn't there to cause problems. He was trying to render aid, you know, basically as a medic with his first aid kit, as well as defend a private business. He was seen trying to de-escalate an issue, and he was attacked for it. And at the time that the final shooting was coming down, according to the live stream video, Rittenhouse was trying to get away from them and talking about going to the police, that he was going to go to the police, and they attacked him. And of course, it was the rioters that fired the first shot. Now, whether they fired at him and missed because they're a bad shot, or they just fired up into the air in order to scare him. Let's see here. Rioters fire a gun, chase him down, knock him down, hit him over the head with a skateboard, and then put a gun to his head. And no, you know, according to the left, this is not a proper use of force. This is not a self-defense. No reasonable person would have thought their life was in danger and fired back. Look, if Kyle Rittenhouse didn't fire his gun when he did, he would be the one dead. And that guy complaining about missing 90% of his triceps or biceps would be on trial for murder, and the left would just be trying to go off and claim that guy is innocent. I mean, you want to understand why there is no faith or trust in the media? It's crap like this. It's the complete lies and disinformation campaigns that the left is trying to go through and engage in. It's the gaslighting by the media. And by the way, it's not just the media. There is a lack of faith in a whole bunch of institutions, the FBI. Why? Because the FBI gets caught time and time again in massive scandals and corruption, such as going off with the Hillary Clinton's espionage case, where instead of investigating, they were actually involved in trying to help cover it up. The FBI's Russia collusion investigation that they knew was bogus, that they knew the dossier was a bunch of crap, and yet they still used it in order to justify their spying operation on a political campaign in order to try and influence the outcome of the election and leak some of the information that they gathered to the media and to the Clinton campaign to try and influence the outcome of the election, spending millions of dollars on a special counsel probe that knew it was based on a complete lie. Or now the FBI going off and doing raids on journalists at Project Veritas because they're looking for a stolen diary. Yeah. We all know what happened there. You know, James O'Keefe, you know, someone sent him a diary, claimed it was, what is it, Ashley Biden's diary that was full of a bunch of explosive information, right? Very damaging. A lot of criminal activity there in the Biden family. And they couldn't authenticate it. They tried to return it to Miss Biden's lawyer, who refused to accept it, by the way. They didn't run the story. They sent it off to law enforcement. And then the FBI raids, as if the FBI is just the personal tool of Biden's family, of the Democrats. And what were they looking for? Any potential copies of the diary. How can they say that they were going off and looking for a stolen diary after it had already been returned to them? The only reasonable assumption is they were looking for potential photocopied pages from that diary. Which, by the way, I believe authenticates the diary. So if you see anything about Ashley Biden's diary, and pictures or photocopies of the pages within it, you know, or from it, published online, the FBI just authenticated it. Oh, but our trust in these institutions have more reasons to drop, such as with the CDC. What have they come out to say? Well, the CDC, new study Vaccination offers higher protection than previous COVID-19 infection. The CDC is actually out there right now trying to claim that the vaccines that they are pushing are more effective than natural immunity, than your own antibodies after recovery. Now, of course, after the CDC had come out and published this new study, they were quickly mocked by a bunch of actual medical experts. They were mocked, and it's like, nowhere at any point in time has a vaccine been more effective than natural immunity. And those who looked at the actual data know that natural immunity is far more effective than any of the so-called vaccines that they are pushing that are not actually vaccines. And so the experts are going out there and saying, not only is the underlining conclusion complete bunk, but that this so-called study is so flawed that no credible medical expert, no credible scientist would have ever published this. And in their view, the only reason why the CDC would even publish such an obviously flawed study with such an obvious debunked conclusion is all due to political pressure. That it's only because of the pressure to try and convince people to get vaccines that they basically produced pure propaganda and published it on the CDC site. Wow. Wow. Think about that for a moment. You want to know why there is a complete lack of faith in all of our institutions? It's because all of these institutions keep lying to us. And they keep getting caught lying to us. It's like the boy who cried wolf. You know, why is it that people lost faith in the credibility of the boy who kept crying wolf when there was no wolf? Maybe it's because they got tired of being lied to. And that's the thing. For those of you in the media, for those of you at the FBI, for those of you who are at the CDC, the NIH, or any of these other organizations, as long as you keep lying to us, and especially since you keep getting caught lying to us, you're going to continue to lose credibility. Because that's what happens with liars. And of course, CBSN has their narrative on the vaccine mandate. Oh yes, you know, we all know about the vaccine mandate. CBSN has their own view. And they run a report about, hey, people are getting fired now for submitting fake vaccine passports. And then they go off and try to convince you of the dangers of someone who would go off and submit a fake vaccine passport. I believe this is clip number 5. But in their attempts to fearmonger, they basically undercut the entire argument for a vaccine mandate. Here it is.
You know, I was in high school and in college. I mean, we all remember the whole fake ID thing, which was, you know, a thing back when I was growing up. But this is different. This is like putting other people's lives at risk just because you choose not to follow a mandate or a regulation as implemented by your employer. So what would happen if somebody was presented a fake vaccine card and then got another employee sick?
Now, let's go ahead and analyze this just for a moment here. Okay, now the problem with the vaccine mandate, and there are many problems, especially with the whole emergency temporary standard. The pandemic started, about December, January of 2020. That was about 18 months ago, if actually more than 18 months ago now. So we're not really at the stage where this is a new emerging issue. You know, for a temporary standard while we wait for our congressional leaders to act, because they've had over a year and a half to pass any legislation that they thought was needed to address the pandemic. So there is that problem, you know, with the emergency temporary standard, is the fact that the legislature has had more than enough time to come up with any laws or new regulations that would be needed to address the emergency situation. So that is one problem. The other problem is we've had the vaccine available to the public since January. So about 10, 11 months now. So people have had plenty of opportunities. Plus, the vaccine has been available for free. So everyone who wants to get vaccinated has had 11 months to go ahead and get that done for free. So again, it's not an emergency temporary standard. It doesn't meet that definition in any way, shape, or form. But here's what gets to me when they go off and they talk about the unvaccinated. You know, what happens if an unvaccinated person goes into the workforce and they assume that everybody else is vaccinated? And as a result, they get someone else infected with COVID-19. Well, wait a minute. If you're talking about the one unvaccinated person going into the workforce and getting another person who has been vaccinated and giving them COVID, well, then aren't you just saying that the vaccine is completely worthless? Provides almost zero protection whatsoever? Since when does if the vaccines work and are effective, since when do the vaccinated people have to worry about catching something from the unvaccinated people? You kind of see where I'm going with this. There's a lot of problems with their whole argument here. Now, if they're saying, well, there was another unvaccinated person, okay, yeah, but they made that choice. They made the choice not to get vaccinated and to take that risk. And there's plenty of reasons, actually, to not get vaccinated. One of them being that there is no long-term studies. This didn't go through any of the trials. We have no idea what the long-term side effects are. And the fact that people have suffered adverse reactions to the vaccine. Adverse reactions that, of course, the government is trying to cover up. We also don't know just how bad the COVID-19 actually is, because all of the data has been falsified, or in a sense that they've been inflated. Listing people who died for any reason as having died of COVID. So they don't have the data to really tell us how bad COVID-19 really is, right? They are telling us that the vaccines are needed, but don't actually provide any real protection. And they say that this is an emergency situation after over a year and a half for any laws that need to be written to be written. A lot of problems here. And of course, if there's another study that has come out, that is informed that the so-called vaccines pretty much lose almost all of their protection and effectiveness within 6 months. So with this vaccine mandate in place, you will have to go in and get a booster shot pretty much every 3 or 4 months. Keep taking that government needle. As the government claims, they have the right to inject you with whatever they want to inject into your body. But you see the problem here. On the one hand, they say we need to get the vaccine. The CDC is saying the vaccine is the most effective way to prevent the spread, more effective than natural immunity, while at the same time arguing, no, you can't get a fake vaccine card because you could get someone infected who is vaccinated. The incoherence of the left is not just related to this particular issue, but the left is incoherent on many issues, and yet they get away with it. No one ever calls them out on their total incoherent arguments. They're talking out of both sides of their mouths, and they do it all the time. Anyways, that's it for this particular episode. I'd like to thank you so much for watching on Rumble. Yes, this will be posted to Rumble first. I'm not even sure I'm going to bother posting anything to YouTube anymore. Well, I probably will until they ban me, but until they do, I'm going to be using the YouTube channel in order to promote the Rumble channel. And if you want to get my content first, you got to go over to Rumble, because that's where it's going to be posted first. Then it will be posted to YouTube later. But of course, at the same time as it's released on Rumble, it will also be released on audio. So YouTube viewers, you get the last views of this video. You have to wait longer than those on Rumble and those listening to the audio version of the podcast. All right. Thank you so much. Don't forget to hit that like button. Go ahead, share this around all over social media. For those of you who are listening to the audio version of the show, don't forget to leave me a rating and a review so other people can find the podcast as well. Thank you so much, and I will be back again soon.